Hello and welcome to the Leaders in Supply Chain and Logistics podcast. I am your host, Rada Palamariu, Global Logistics and Supply Chain Practice Head for Morgan Phillips Executive Search. Specializing in board level and executive recruitment across the region, my job is also to connect you with global experts, thought leaders and executives in all things supply chain. This is episode 16, and I'm happy to have with us today Marco Civardi. Marco is currently Area Managing Director for Damco Vietnam, Cambodia, Myanmar and Laos. He is a hands-on leader and has built strong and stable businesses in the cluster, basically in Vietnam, in Cambodia, Myanmar and Laos, all of which are key markets for the Damco global business. Just to give our listeners a little bit of a reference point, Damco is one of the world's leading third-party logistics providers specializing in delivering customized freight forwarding and supply chain solutions with more than 300 offices in 100 countries and employing 11,000 people, as well as a net turnover of $3.2 billion. Damco, as you may also know, is part of the bigger umbrella company Maersk, which is the largest shipping line in the world. Marco's previous role was also regional head of the fashion vertical for Asia Pacific, based in Tokyo for Panalpina. And in this role, he led a virtual team of fashion sales experts across many countries, including Korea, Japan, Singapore, Malaysia, Indonesia, Philippines, Vietnam, Thailand, India, and Australia. Prior to that, he was the head of marketing and sales for Panalpina Japan. And in addition to Japan, he lived and worked in Italy, Hong Kong, and Australia. Marco is Italian, speaks several languages, including Japanese, and he received an MBA from the Macquarie Graduate School of Management in Sydney. Additionally, he received a certificate in supply chain management from the Cranfield School of Management in UK. Marco, it's a pleasure to have you with us today.
Thank you for having me.
So let's deep dive a little bit in terms of the cluster and in terms of the countries that you are managing for Damco. So maybe tell us a little bit about each market specifically and some elements of doing business in each country.
Sure. I think we can start from Vietnam. I think in Vietnam, we are very much seeing strong growth over the past years. Growth driven mainly by export, of course, also foreign direct investment. And the interesting part is that we see also the fact that the country used to be very much oriented into garments and textile, footwear, and now also with a lot of emphasis on technology, a lot of companies like Samsung are investing, and also many Japanese companies are investing too, like Panasonic and so forth, which is great because the country is also diversifying the export base, so to speak. In Cambodia, we see also strong growth there, but less dynamism in comparison to Vietnam in terms of free trade agreements. I think Vietnam has been quite active recently, Cambodia slightly less, and is very much depending on garments export as a source of growth. One area we're looking into Cambodia is a very strong wage growth over the last few years. So we are sometimes pondering when is the tipping point and how the country can further diversify its economic growth going forward. Myanmar, a very interesting part of the cluster. Also, you can name it this cluster as a growth tiger, if you will. Myanmar also on a different stage of economic development, just recently opened up, but very interesting prospect. For example, we know that the number of affluent consumers in Myanmar plan to double by 2020 to around 10 million people out of a population of 50 million. And more interesting also in Vietnam, the so-called affluent consumer plan to become around 33 million by 2020, which is around a third of the population of 90 million. So I think very bright future ahead, and probably the right point in time to be in this cluster.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, an impressive growth potential. And what would you say, typical question, and I think it kind of cuts to the core of the situation. What would you say some of the challenges and the opportunities in the markets that you lead? And maybe if you can share with us some stories of some unexpected or pleasant or unpleasant surprises you had while doing business in these markets.
Well, I think every day emerging markets give you pleasant and unpleasant. It's a very dynamic part of the world. So in general, of course, many, many more opportunities than challenges. I would say one of the biggest opportunities to really act and be as the enabler of our customer business strategy. So there's a lot of clients we serve that expect very ambitious midterm growth plan. So we need to plan capacity ahead. We need to, of course, streamline our processes ahead and be there for the long haul, be really the right hand of our clients in the growth path over the next few years. And that's really, really an interesting mission to allocate resources and make sure that their success, of course, is our success, and we jointly grow together. I would also add on one of the biggest opportunities as well is the opportunity to upskill the local workforce. We are spending a lot in training. We're investing quite a lot on personalized training and also via a very rigorous talent management process. But the capability to impact on the level of expertise on the local workforce is great. And we are investing quite heavily on this, and we are seeing the results on a number of programs we are doing on filling internal position, also later on sending talents overseas. Mm. I would also add the diversity. I think it's a very diverse cluster from a culture and business point of view, or also each country at a different economic stage of development. So we can have, of course, cross-cultural learning opportunities for our talent in different countries, because even though two countries are close together, the mentality and the business setting is quite different. And so leveraging on this diversity of business culture can be for us a very good source of motivation and engagement for our people in the cluster. Challenges. I think obviously the plate is full. Being an emerging market, I would say the classic, of course, is infrastructure.
Yeah.
In general, you see that the infrastructure, ports, roads, airport, and so forth, is not yet picking up to maintain the pace of the business growth. So you still have, for example, the Ho Chi Minh Airport, which is operating, but operating at above the capacity level. So an urgent investment is needed to catch up with the level of business growth. So I think that obviously remains there as a challenge. And we believe that step by step, there's a lot of projects that make us be confident for the medium term that the infrastructure issue will be much less of an issue and more as a success story.
Yes.
I would also add that the fact on talent, the fact that it's not easy to find qualified talents. In general, in emerging market, we have company with growing hiring needs, and not always the right expertise is available locally. So again, there's a lot of focus on how to overcome this challenge, and everybody has a different approach. I would also add on a relatively low labor mobility. Sometimes we have talent locally that could fit for certain jobs overseas, but strong family bonds don't necessarily allow them to make a move overseas. So those are the couple of issues that we are looking into at as our key challenges
yes.
for the moment.
And I mean, just to add to the point that actually it's interesting that you mentioned Ho Chi Minh as an example in terms of needing a little bit more upscaling for the airport, because I would imagine that from the cluster, Vietnam is probably the more advanced in infrastructure compared to Cambodia, Laos, and Myanmar as a whole, let's say.
Indeed, and probably I would say Vietnam is also one of the countries which, of course, belong to the Greater Mekong sub-region, who is quite active on each single project that at the moment is ongoing to improve the connectivity within the cluster. So there are a number of examples where, if you look into, for example, the north-south corridor, so the improvement that you can see from the South China area to Hanoi Haiphong. Travel time has been reduced, and of course Vietnam is a key player in that particular project. Then you have another corridor you can name as the east-west. So you can connect the Da Nang in central Vietnam via Laos and Thailand up to Myanmar. And also there is the South Corridor, the Ho Chi Minh Phnom Penh Expressway. So there's a whole initiative where there's a great focus to improve the connectivity, and Vietnam is always there. So I think
yes.
It's very much active, and also at the moment, yes, you can say,
yes,
more advanced.
Got it. And because I know that I was reading also in terms of, there's a lot of talk and it's massive investment from China on the One Belt, One Road initiative, but I think in terms of the countries that they're massively investing, Laos is one of them, right? Where they put in a lot of money in terms of building the highway and maybe that's the corridor that you meant.
Indeed, I would say at the moment they invest, the key one for the whole cluster is mainly, of course, Korean for manufacturing, Japanese for manufacturing, and also Japanese, they help in the infrastructure development, also China, they play a big role also in Cambodia. So at the moment we still have the majority of Asian related investment, but then, you know, as time goes by, the economy will open up even further and maybe more investment from US and Europe is coming in. We have a lot of companies sourcing already in this part of the world from US and Europe. But in terms of infrastructure, of course, the Asian investors are the key so far.
Yes. No, that's very good, and it kind of touches upon the question that I wanted to ask in terms of that these mega projects that are being built and developed to connect even further the countries and improve the connectivity, the duration, the transportation, obviously, links.
And I think it's important that, you know, when we talk about transportation links, is often become an economic link because the Greater Mekong Sub-region touch on improving tourism, touch on improving public health. And of course, the key one is on improving transport connectivity. So you cannot think of sort of hardware and software. So the hardware is the quality and the safetyness of the roads, and the software need to be the time to go through border and the costs. So they both need to improve in parallel. And I think when you look into the Greater Mekong Sub-region, the number of projects they have now on the horizon, which is like more than 200, I think you can be quite confident that something will happen. The question, of course, is this happening at the pace we want? But that's obviously a different story. But the dynamism and the focus, we think, is there.
Yes. I mean, as you said, it's definitely happening. Probably it could always happen faster, but nevertheless, I mean, it's the pace is quite incredible. Also, it brings a lot of opportunities in terms of project logistics, doesn't it? And in terms of capitalizing on all this kind of construction, building projects, that infrastructure projects, large industrial
Absolutely.
Projects.
Absolutely, it goes together.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about technology. I know that you have MyDamco as a system that you use to keep track of orders from clients. Tell us a little bit about it. How does it improve your operations? How does it improve your client serving?
Thanks for asking this one. Obviously, MyDamco is crucial for us. It is fundamentally an integrated online application, which include the shipper booking portal and different functionality from reporting to documentation management, as well as communication exception and track and trace functionalities. Recently has been ranked by Gartner as one of the key application for reporting capabilities. And essentially what we want to achieve is that we want to basically allow our customer to spend less time in building reports and more time to analyze their business by accessing data from a single source of truth, so to speak, having more than 900 fields where to customize the report. And obviously, from our customer, it facilitates their internal alignment by having access to data from a single source. So I think for us, it's key, obviously, to constantly think of simplify more and more the customer experience.
Yes, got it. How about continuous improvement? Because I know that it's an important concept for Damco, for your operations, and also in terms of the work that you've been doing in the cluster. Maybe if you have some success case studies around it, and specifically for...
Indeed, I think the so-called continuous improvement, or CI, so far is absolutely crucial. I would say it is part of our mindset. It's also part of the way we work and how we set our ambitions. So we try to have a CI, or continuous improvement mentality, embedded really in the organization. Always try to raise the bar higher and obviously improve our own performance. So it has a bigger value than the functional scope per se. When you look into CI, I think mainly the mission is, of course, to simplify, streamline processes, at the same time guaranteeing a high quality service, being cost effective. You can also simplify more by saying working smarter instead of harder. There's a number of examples that we have that our CI teams in global office or region or areas or countries are really adding a lot of value to us. For example, one of the projects we have is to share resources during peak seasons. Different customers are at different seasonalities, so we want to make sure that we limit, obviously, the overtime, and then we train our staff in different teams to help the other team when the peak season occurs in order to have the workload more evenly spread. So that's just one of the initiatives that our CI team is constantly looking at across each different country. One important aspect, for example, is productivity. We try to look at productivity from a multidimensional approach, not only productivity improvement per se, but also what is the link to, of course, the overtime, what is the link to attrition, because all are elements that impact on our cost to serve. So we try to really have a holistic view on how we can have a sustainable business. And CI teams are helping a lot into that. Nothing can be done, obviously, without getting feedback. So for us, it's key to have constant feedback in terms of voice of staff by regular survey and also voice of customers. So those are embedded on an ongoing basis in the way we do things, so to speak. We also have another element called LMA, Lean Maturity Assessment. So on a regular basis, we want to make sure that our staff is aware of the lean methodology we have. So to go away from firefighting and go more into root cause analysis when problem occurs. And this is also very important and is done on a systematic basis throughout the year.
Yes.
Obviously, the question is now, how do you know what good look like? And one of the key aspects for us is to keep track of our net promoter score, which obviously is a combination of effort between sales, customer service, and operation. The more the net promoter score is increasing, the more there is a correlation that we are making sure that the CI team is allowing a smooth customer experience.
Yes, yes. This is a question it kind of prompted in my mind right now, because also I know that you're highly successful. I think the cluster is one of the most successful in Damco worldwide, as well as you've obviously managed to fight very successfully with all the big boys and win in the specific cluster in Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos and Myanmar. So I'm just curious if you were to share with us a couple of the what made it so successful. You know, what's some of the, let's say, secrets of success in the cluster?
Well, I think we had a lot of support from our customers. I must say, Damco has a very strong maturity, we say, in this cluster, and our customer supported us very much throughout the year. They really put us at the center of the growth strategy, and this obviously helped a lot. And this has happened because of the work the team have done over the past number of years in order to earn that trust, to earn that support, that we start to work together for one particular product or project, and then later on together again we expand and we further grow. At the same time, I would say the economy picked up quite well over the past few years. I would say there's a combination of strong trust from existing customer, good economic momentum, and I would say also the reward from the effort on people engagement and talent management that I think we intensified more in the last few years.
Yes.
So I wouldn't give you an answer straight. I would give you
a combination of
external information on the economy, which benefit everybody, obviously. Our customer trust and the work we have done internally to build our teams and make good decisions on talent management in the past few years.
Yes, got it. And talking about talent and talking about people, because indeed finding talent in emerging markets is a very different thing to finding talent in mature markets like Singapore, Europe, or US. What's some of the, and you've touched a little bit upon it, but what's some of the challenges and opportunities you find around this?
Absolutely a key question for us. I would say before looking into finding talent, equally important is to retain talent because it's a very hot job market. People sometimes they decide to go overseas to study, or they decide to work for the family business, just as a normal evolution of the economy, so to speak, and obviously you can't necessarily stop them. So retention is as important as attraction, I would say. For us, let's say we like to see ourselves as a talent factory, using this acronym, in the sense of try to fill at least 80% of the position internally with rigorous training programs, and also with tailor-made training programs that we have for basically all our key staff across the cluster. So one answer to the finding talent in the emerging market is that we want to create talent from within. And that's something absolutely key that we focus on. And I think 80% of a position filled internally is a good ambition level, because you need to have some space for some fresh blood from outside, because you need obviously to have an element of diversification in your team as well in terms of perspective. But that's what we're working on, and I think the progress has been quite positive over the last few years. So we take the talent mission by trying to create from within. And I would say that create from within is not only for the benefit of the cluster, but what we have seen recently is that we have been able to send some of our talent also overseas.
Yes.
And that actually allows us to win on two fronts. On the one hand, we create basically a medium-term succession plan when this strong talent will come back eventually to our cluster after some important experience in Europe or the US or the Middle East. And in the short term, we create that necessary genuine engagement so that our people know that once you have integrity, once you display our values in your leadership, once you have an impeccable track record of result, the opportunity may come. And we try to live this by example of people who are actually making it, coming from Cambodia or from Vietnam, and we hope soon also from Myanmar.
Yes. Okay. Super. And I mean, and just to dig a little bit deeper, do you typically, when you take these people, and I assume it's a combination of methods, but would you take them more or higher percentage straight from university, or would you take them with some background and experience, or it's a little bit of both? Or
well, I think to work in Damco overseas, you have to have an experience in the company for sure. So we actually tend to send successful people with a good track record internally that can already, hit the ground running and add value to the organization that is making this particular investment on them. Building on the external engagement of university, this is something we are doing in the cluster, and it's very important because on the one hand, we want to make sure that logistics is an exciting industry. This message needs to go through to a lot of candidates on universities across the cluster. Logistics still does have a relatively good growth prospect in the cluster with all the business momentum that we are talking about. So it should be considered as one of the peak, hopefully. And I think another role to do from a Maersk standpoint is to make sure that we are a diversified group, that we can offer particular career opportunity that not every other player can offer, with a different business unit, different scope in the supply chain. So hopefully we can be more and more appealing to the new batch of candidates coming online.
Yes. And for sure, I think Maersk as a brand and as a company, and including of course Damco, it has a very strong reputation, and over time, you've built that employer brand, to say that. And how about I mean, technologies? We need to go to kind of circle back into that, because this is changing all industries, and of course it's also changing logistics, it's changing supply chains. And it's changing it at a faster pace than ever before. So I guess the question is, and we do repeat this question to all our guests, what are some of the skills that you think logistics professionals need to have to stay relevant on the long term?
A key question that we're asking ourselves, obviously, already. I think before we talk about the individuals, I would like to spend a word on companies. I think from the company point of view, from the employer side, I think we really need to understand that we have to create a culture of lifelong journey with a continuous learning opportunity for the staff. And this is easier said than done. And we know this is not happening in every company. So that's absolutely key. And we also believe that the lack or the potential lack of adequate training can be clearly a source of attrition for the millennials, who value very much being, of course, trained and being professionally equipped for the future challenges. So I would like also to put a little bit of constructive pressure on the company. Are we doing enough in terms of lifelong journey culture that we need to build for the future? That's obviously a question mark. In terms of skills, I would say that two train of thoughts come into mind. One is, if you build on the technology wave that we have now, clearly roles such as IT programming or data scientists will be a role in high demand, as basically this position embed the capability to deal with complex information and to interpret data. So that's obviously one angle to skills development. For the other side, I would say that everything which is today not replaceable by a machine. So I would place a lot of focus on so-called cognitive skills, critical thinking, and also a mixture between, I would say, social and emotional skills, such as communication, ability to persuade, and also ability to create empathy as well. So those are the elements that I would suggest to stay relevant. Obviously, we cannot forget creativity. And one of the ways to boost creativity is, in my opinion, to live abroad. So if you're having an experience overseas, that by itself should help you to get different perspective what you see on your hometown. But those are the thoughts that, come to mind on what could be relevant long term.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how, I mean, in terms of obviously you're in a leadership position, you manage large team. What are some of the leadership principles that you follow in your day-to-day work?
There's a few, to be honest, Radu. I will start from the group. I think I learned from Maersk the value of constant care, which I think is a great one. To me, one of the guiding light. That fundamentally means leading today, taking care of today while preparing for tomorrow. And fundamentally also underline that what you achieve, how you achieve is as important as what you achieve. I think it's very, very crucial for us to always keep an eye on the medium term, always keep an eye on the future, and asking ourselves if we are making a company stronger tomorrow, as well as obviously try to over-deliver on the target that you have today. So that's, I think, a very important one. I really learned very much recently. In our cluster, we had a motto called Together We Win. Together We Win basically want to emphasize the word together. That means teamwork. We want to make sure that different teams know what's expected from each other, and then we give candid feedback to each other. Again, easier said than done, but we're in the process of getting much, much better. So I think teamwork and working across function is absolutely key if you want to achieve bigger results.
I'll just stop you for a moment on this one, because obviously we've together been in Asia for a long time, and just historically and also culturally, sometimes it's tough for a certain, the Asian culture is more a little bit more concerned when it comes to giving feedback, right? So you almost need to do a reshape of the organizational culture to encourage it even more.
Yeah.
Maybe you would need to do it in other places like Europe, where it's a bit more embedded. So how, maybe if you can just dwell a little bit, because I assume that you had to, that reinforcement had to be done consciously, right? Maybe tell us a little bit.
Yeah, we do it on a regular basis. I think we basically allow teams to share feedback via HR, and then the feedback comes in an anonymous way, and then we process the feedback diligently. Then we set a timeline. So, for example, the feedback sharing that we have today will be replicated in 4 to 5 months from now, so that we keep a sort of a calendar, so to speak, because issues and type of feedback change over time.
Yes.
And so we basically have HR as our guiding leader in this particular task to ensure people can speak their mind and remain anonymous. But then we, I would say, literally put the fish on the table between each other, and we talk, and we analyze the issue, and we address. And this also goes very much into my own feedback as well from my own manager. So I'm fostering that culture of feedback quite a lot. And this is, of course, cascading down through different teams.
Yes.
I'm not sure if it's the best way to do it, but that's something which is working for us.
Yes.
And it's a trial and error, right? I mean, you never really start and you get it right the first place because of the reason you mentioned. And there are some culture which they tend to be more open, some culture tend to be more reserved. And, you know, step by step, we can find our way through.
Yes, yes. I mean, and as you said, also, it, just as with the feedback, because as you go along, you notice several or other things that pop up, right? It's the
yeah.
same. And I imagine that even the cultures from Myanmar to Cambodia to Laos to Vietnam would be different, and even this would have some localized angles to it.
They would. If I can elaborate also on the principle, beside the fact that I consider leadership fundamentally as a service, and obviously we are here to try to serve, at least what I tell myself, the broader community around me, such as giving to our staff the necessary care, the solution to our customers, return to the shareholders, and hopefully that the community become better thanks to our presence. So that's one of the angles I always keep into my mind, as a sort of multidimensional approach on what leadership is all about. It's about giving a service and try to make sure that the context around you benefit. Recently, I developed something in the line of self-renewal. So I try every year to zoom in on a new skill, and I try to develop it quite fully. So this year is a year of coaching, and I try to learn, how to become more effective, and also how to have sufficient airtime, so to speak, with what we identify as the critical, 6 to 7% of the organization in the cluster, that allow me to have a granular knowledge of what's going on in the company at different level, and allow them to have an unfiltered way by one-on-one session to voice out what can be better, what's not clear, what are we good at, we should do more. And so I try every year to somehow renew
yes.
the portfolio of leadership yes. skill, if you will.
Yes, I think that's also one of the key habits of Stephen Covey, if I'm not wrong. I mean, he wrote the 7 habits of highly effective people, and I think the 8th habit is the...
Okay.
Or anyways, it's part of the book, so absolutely. In your career, you've made some interesting switches, right? Because you were part of sales, marketing, highly focused on that, and then you moved to this full profit and loss role for Damco in the cluster. Tell us a little bit, how did you manage to do that? Because a lot of people in the industry are trying, are dreaming or are hoping to do this one day. And also, what were some of your key learnings? Because I also imagine when you did that shift, you had to pick up quite a few things.
Indeed. What I would say, the key thoughts coming to mind is a combination of curiosity and determination. I think you really need to have the right level of curiosity to go out of your comfort zone and basically... test yourself into new water, and determination, so the willingness to, I think, persevere, because particularly the beginning is not that easy. I would say for me, in particular, I was in a new group, a new role, in a new market at the same time. So probably in retrospect, I would say it's probably an applied learning agility case, so to say. So extremely enriching. Well, I think in terms of learning, what I can share is a few things. I mean, first of all, I would suggest people to have a few mentors. It's very important to have people outside the organization that you can bounce off some ideas when you are confronted to new issues that you have not dealt with before. And I found it extremely valuable, not only for problem solving, but also to shape your thinking in a different way, to have a different perspective. Particularly if mentors are also outside, I think, our industry is even better. What helped me in particular is that I had in my mind a business plan before I started. So beside the 100 days done, I had a little bit of a medium-term idea of where this cluster could go. That helped me quite a lot, because even though you go through the initial, allow me to say, chaos, disruption can come in, no matter what, you go home at night and you're following your plan. If you cannot do something this week, then you postpone next week. But the plan is consistent. That for me has been a very, very good help. I would say the key learnings over time, obviously, is the fact that once you switch from a functional role to a leadership P&L role, the impact you have on the result as an individual contributor get less and less. So the learning really is try to manage the context as well as you can and try to excel into delegate and empower as much as possible. So I really believe on the fact that you are the reflected glory of your team. And this thinking doesn't come overnight. It's a trial and error. You start to get involved in so many projects, and then step by step you start to delegate better, and then you start to make sure that the context is supporting everyone around you to perform at their best. So I think this is one of the key learning that came through the number of trial and error of the past of the past few years.
Yes. Final question. If you could give some advice to a 23-year-old graduating university and wanting to achieve a great career in logistics, maybe, you know, becoming a cluster head one day, what would that be?
Well, I wish I would have received some advice when I started. I think what comes to mind is try to pick a company, first of all, that has a compelling purpose and value that you share. I think ultimately these two elements are what drive motivation and engagement and loyalty over time. So for example, you look into the Maersk Group. So why we come to work, why we are here? We want to facilitate global trade. We want to connect and simplify our customer supply chain. To me, this is an extremely compelling purpose. Facilitating global trade help prosperity, help growth. So we are contributing to the best we can, to the greater good, which I think is great. When you look into our values, we put people at the center stage of everything we do. And I think it is very important because we are still obviously very much a people industry and people are the one that make it happen. So the first advice I would give to the 20 years old guy is probably to have a coffee with Maersk before moving to the next step. But I think it's important, the compelling purpose and value as in my opinion, key criteria to screen for which employer you really want to raise your hand. At an individual level, the thoughts coming to mind is, I think, first of all, on versatility. I think it's very important to focus on tasks, learning different tasks, learning different experience. Don't look into the job title. Try to have a portfolio of experiences as rich, as diverse as you can possibly have. I would also say adaptability. Try to work in different markets. Of course, if possible, try to work abroad. Get new perspective. That's absolutely key. And I would also add communication, learning different languages. So to me, if a 23 years old today has versatility, adaptability, and communication together with the right company, I think the person could be on a very good track.
Yeah, super. No, I mean, very good summary. And I hear that it's a reoccurring theme with you, and I also strongly believe it myself. The fact that you know, the more exposure you have to different experiences, different countries, different languages, you know, the more it kind of forces you to be adaptable and to be flexible. And
it's basically forcing you to unlearn what you learned in the past and relearn completely from scratch, and try to bring the good of your previous experience and try to be obviously very humble and try to adapt yourself to the new reality. So I would strongly recommend this path.
Yeah, super. Well, Marco, thank you very much for joining us today, and thank you for all the good sharing.
Thank you, Rado. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to follow us on radopalamario.com/podcast for all the show notes, links, and extra tips covered in the interview. Make sure also to subscribe to our emailing list to get the news in the nick of time. If you're listening through a streaming platform like iTunes or Stitcher and you like what we do, please kindly review and give us 5 stars so we can keep the energy flowing and get more people to find out about our podcast. I'm most active on LinkedIn, so do feel free to follow me to stay tuned for our latest articles as well as future guests for the podcast. And if you have any suggestions or any other idea, please feel free to write to me. I respond to all. And also, please make sure not to miss our next episode, where we will be having a few other C-level and top leaders in supply chain joining us. Stay tuned.